Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And so we're live today. We're talking about vacations, traveling for food, best things you ever had when you're on vacation, the places you want to go on vacation just so that you can eat. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about our list there.
That's pretty much what I think about when I want to go on vacation. I just want to figure out where I want to go so I can eat there.
I promise I understand. And I bet a lot of our listeners do understand as well. I'm going to prove that we are live, though. We don't always do that, but we are. When we say that we're live, we really are live.
Mm-hmm.
So Cindy sends me a frantic text message at 11:39 that essentially she cannot get here because as fast as she likes to drive.
I can't figure out how to get around
Artscape. And as intrepidly as she avoids traffic. Yeah, she was blocked
by
force.
I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't understand this Artscape
greater
thing.
Greater than nature.
Where do I go? How do I get around it? I went right into the meat of it, too. It was quite exciting. So yes, we are live. Yeah. We're live.
Yeah. And
call
you
us.
And you did actually get out of there.
Yeah, I figured it out. Calvert Street's the answer. Calvert. Well, All right.
So anyway, you can reach us 410-662-8780. Or send an email, foremanwolf@wypr.org, and send us questions on that topic or any others. I think we already were getting an email or two. And before we even get started, we have someone with a monkfish emergency, it seems.
Hey, Liz,
how are you today?
Let's go
to our first call.
It's an emergency.
What's
Hi,
happening?
Hi, Tony.
How you doing?
So monkfish was on sale at the grocery store.
Okay.
I bought some, a little piece for me, a little piece for my husband, and I cooked it before with just tomatoes, garlic, olive oil, and olives.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. My husband couldn't stand it. So I just need an idea for how to cook a delicious monkfish dish that's fairly simple that, you know, I don't have to run to the grocery store and get ingredients for.
That's... I love monkfish, so you're going to get me on this. Like most fish, I'd much rather have it in a pan. Monkfish for sure, it's a pretty juicy fish.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely has more of a shellfish kind of texture than a lot of other fish, which means it can be kind of firm. For me, doing it simply, get a pan hot. The heavier bottom pan that you have, whether it's a steel pan or a copper pan, That's great. You could even use an iron pan, but get that relatively hot so that when the fish goes in, it gets a good sear.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and season the fish. Give it a little bit of salt. It's not going to need a ton. It's from the sea. You'll need to season the accompaniments that you have for it. But the whole thing is, to me, with fish, is you have to respect that piece of fish and cook it correctly, so sear that nicely. The last few moments that it's before you turn it, and you want to get it, to where it will move reasonably and not stick to the pan. If you have too much oil or you have not enough oil, if you don't have the pan hot enough, it will stick to the pan. But you can smell it just as it begins to color, and that's the time to turn it over. When you turn it, it's going to start cooking out a lot more of the juice that's there. Once you're colored on both sides. For me, I throw a little bit I pour off some of the oil, I throw a little bit of butter in the pan, and then I'll spoon the butter as it browns over the fish to make it sort of extra crispy on the outside. And whatever other accompaniments you have for it, if it's tomatoes that are roasted in season or eggplants that you grilled or whatever it might be, that's fine. But you want to look after that fish first and foremost. If you feel like you have to do other things before you serve that fish and you don't want it to overcook, just have your oven on low. Pull that fish when it's still a little bit under. Throw it in the oven to warm and to finish. And monkfish is something you want to cook most of the way through.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a tuna where you want to serve it medium rare or something like that. So I hope that helps.
It does.
Thank you. Thank you for your question. Have a good day.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Liz.
I would say quickly, one of the things I love about monkfish is, especially if you lightly dust it with flour, And you're going to end up with a little bit of natural thickening in the pan. I like to do just at the end a little bit of finely chopped shallot, thinly sliced button mushroom. Just work it all together with the fish in the pan. Get some really good flavor going. And you could stop there, or you could deglaze with a little white wine, add a little bit of cold butter, and just make a quick little sauce. And that would be great with rice. That would be such a good rice dish. Basmati rice, saffron basmati rice, straight
Sounds
basmati.
Good.
Yeah. Monkfish I've started to actually like. There's a time where I really, the texture of monkfish
I was gonna
is
say,
very
that,
unusual.
I knew I was taking that question when I saw it was monkfish because I like monkfish more than you typically.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We have an email, Diane in Catonsville. I have a cooking class on my honeymoon in Mexico last summer. I took a cooking class. Sorry, I cannot read. With my husband, we learned how to make ceviche. I always order it when out, but have been afraid to make it myself. Turns out it's so easy to make,
it's so simple
and refreshing.
It is.
The perfect summer meal, especially on the beach.
It's so much fun to make.
Do you want to talk about a basic ceviche recipe real quick?
I make a couple of different types of ceviche. When I make shrimp ceviche, I learned from someone from El Salvador how they make it, and I've also had ceviche from other countries in Central and South America, but I like this recipe a lot. Thinly sliced red onion, and you just soak the red onion, and I mean really thinly sliced, almost paper thin. So you cut the onion in half, sit it on its flat side, slice it across its body, basically, and then soak it in a couple of rinses of cold water. And then the shrimp, I use a 26-30 count shrimp or a 16-20 count shrimp, a little bit bigger, and nice quality shrimp. Obviously, you're working with something that's actually not going to technically be cooked. Pull the tails off, obviously all the shell, cut them in half horizontally, and those get a rinse of like 3 or 4 times in really cold water as well. And so you've got your red onions in a bowl sitting in cold water now. Your shrimp have been rinsed a couple of times and then drained completely. And then you need enough lime juice to just cover the shrimp. So if I do 5 pounds of 26-30 count shrimp, I do 20 limes. And, you know, one lime is juicier than the next, so approximately 20 limes. And then I let it marinate for about 1 hour in the lime juice, and I add 1 habanero pepper finely chopped, and I use the seed, probably about half a bunch of cilantro, wash it, finely chop it, take the leaves off the stem. I use no stem on cilantro. And then and salt, and that sits. And then eventually, when you're ready to serve it, add the red onion, drained of the water. It's really tasty.
I bet. If you're a listener, you can call us 410-662-8780 and let us know if you can eat 5 pounds of Cindy's shrimp ceviche.
Jeez, just cut it in half. Or...
You always crack me up when you have the recipes for, which I know are what you follow.
You do know what I do for my living. Yeah. Well, just cut it in half.
Or... It's not navigate traffic.
All right.
Anyway, where surprise me with some travel destination where you want to go and you want to eat.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you. I'm talking to listeners,
too. I thought you were talking to the listeners.
As far as I know, you're across the table from me, so.
Okay.
You got to put up with it.
Well, I've had this bug in my bonnet for a bee. A bee in my bonnet.
A bug in my bonnet. Wow.
Well, I just made that up. I've had a bee in my bonnet for since January that I really, really, really want to go to either Central or South America. And because I have a number of friends that are from different countries, actually, we have 3 old employees of ours that have now opened their own restaurants in Ecuador. And I am dying to go visit all 3 of them. They're a sister and 2 brothers. And I'm so proud of them. I mean, they worked for us for a very, very long time and learned so much. And
they're marvelous people. They're just marvelous
Excuse me,
people.
Yes. And so they, I want to go visit them. And while I'm there, they live in Ecuador. And I really want to go to Colombia. I have a very good friend that's from Bogota, and I'm just, and also, honestly, I love Chef's Table. It's a show on Netflix, and I just have learned so much about Brazilian cooking and Peruvian cooking, and I want to go back to Argentina really, really badly as well, because the last time I was there was, I think, 2001, and that's the only time I've ever been there. So I really want to explore the cooking, and I wish I could take, 2 weeks and really kind of just hit all the countries that I would like to explore, but I think it's too extensive, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to me, I just really want to have a better understanding of those cultures and a better understanding of the traditional food and the food that's traditional even to each like little region of those countries. So maybe I need like a month off.
Okay. So I thought we were doing live radio. I didn't realize you were trying to tell me that you needed
a
month off.
I'm leaving for a month.
So, I mean, is there one specific thing that you're chasing?
Actually, I would like to taste the different ceviches. I love the fact that the lady just asked or was talking about that. I'm fascinated with ceviche. And for a long time, I've been making wild rockfish ceviche where I don't actually marinate it, which is obviously the entire intention of ceviche. I put the marinade on to order, which when I do that, it's, you know, thinly sliced pieces of rockfish with the skin off. Obviously, again, anytime you're making ceviche, whatever the product is you're working with has to be incredibly fresh and handled very, very carefully and from a very serious sanitary perspective. Your knife needs to be very, very clean and free of, you know, soap, you know, and everything. So, and your cutting board has to be clean. Everything has to be just right. And when we do the rockfish ceviche, I make a very fine marinade of finely chopped red onion, cilantro, jalapeno pepper, fresh lime juice, fresh lemon juice, extra virgin olive oil, and salt and pepper. And I used to use fleur de sel, but we use kosher salt now. I find fleur de sel sometimes is just too big. You know, it's just like you're eating. I feel like sometimes I'm eating glass when I eat fleur de sel. I'm not quite down
with
the
unattractive
fascination of fleur de sel. But anyway, so kosher salt.
So fleur de sel, you mean the like harvested sea salt.
That, right.
Yeah, it can be pretty big textured stuff. And it can also have pretty strong flavors.
Exactly. So that's, and then when we get an order for the rockfish ceviche, we lay the fish out on the plate, put the marinade on it, and send it out. So it has no marinating time. So it's the exact opposite of what I was talking about before with the shrimp ceviche. And I love rice dishes, but and mostly I love the cultures of those countries.
You can,
and I
you
really
can film
am
it
fascinated.
As you go, and you can just call it a ceviche quest.
Yeah, and maybe, yes, that would be fun.
Yes, Ceviche Quest with Cindy Wolf. Email us or call us if you want to go on that with her. 410-662-8780. Or if you want to eat the 5 pounds of ceviche that she made from shrimp.
Oh, this is a show where Tony makes fun of Cindy. All right.
That's never, ever happened. 410-662-8780. If you want to reach us, and I have an email from a listener. Pablo in Baltimore writes, I have many items on my fantasy food and travel bucket list. But something that I've always seen on those travel TV shows are the vibrant markets in Asia. The street meat in Thailand, the mm-hmm. fresh fish in Japan, mm-hmm. and of course, the stands that sell live and fried insects, fried crickets, and live larvae. That is so out of my wheelhouse, and I'm so eager to experience it.
Good for you.
Have you ever done anything like that? And if not, would you?
I'll answer. I would do it, but I've never traveled to the East, so... Maybe someday. I bet you want to, Tony.
Absolutely. I still have a roommate from college from Taiwan to visit who I enjoyed snake with very much when I was in college a couple of times.
How many people can say that? That's so great. I love that
I can.
So much.
Hello, Chung Shun. He and his wife and 6 kids live in Taiwan.
Oh, that's so awesome. Well, that would be a fun trip. Gosh, so, I'd like to see the rice fields.
Anyway, when we come back,
works.
When we come back, besides the ceviche challenge, we'll have more of your calls and emails. We will have, of course, the most horrible chef's challenge of all time in our last segment. You want to stay tuned for that. And you can reach us, 410-662-8780, or send an email, foremanwolf@wypr.org. Welcome to Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf. Hey, Tony, didn't you just go to Italy? You have to tell us all about it.
I did.
All right, so where did you go? So exciting. Good vacation.
Well, we spent time in 3 places. We were in Sicily on the east coast near Mount Etna, not far away from Taormina, along the beach. And
beautiful.
I definitely know what the best thing is that I ate when I was there.
What was it?
There's these marvelous spiny lobsters in the Mediterranean, super crazy looking. If you have not seen one, please look up a photograph of them. They look like they are from outer space, no question. they have incredibly sweet flesh, and that's something that one of the specialties of where we were was grilling these whole live lobsters. And oh my goodness, that is a spectacular. That
sounds so good.
Spectacular thing. And it's the whole, they grill it in the shell and then open it up. So it's not.
And do they take the meat out or do you get the whole thing on your plate?
You
or?
Get the whole thing on your plate.
Ooh, fun. That's
yeah. Awesome. So that was a spectacular highlight. And with the classic Sicilian sauce, salmoliglio, which is an olive oil based sauce. And everyone has a little bit like chimichurri. There's a million different versions of that sauce.
Okay.
The basics are the olive oil, lemon juice, maybe a tiny drop of white vinegar, a very neutral vinegar.
Okay.
Garlic, herbs, soft herbs, like parsley, which there was a lot of flat leaf parsley in this one. And and sometimes capers.
And it was marvelous. Any accompaniment or just like, you know, vegetable or no? Just
man, I was lobster on a plate.
Lobster and
I was
and,
a very big spiny
and
lobster
delicious
on
oil.
A plate. And
that
I was,
sounds great.
It,
did
yes,
you eat it outside?
Oh, there was an important accompaniment.
Uh-huh.
It was a very fat glass of rosato made from Nerello Mascalese.
What's
which
the
is
name
one
again?
Of the, Nerello Mascalese is one of the grapes that had been growing on Mount Etna for the last 3,300 or so years.
And Mount Etna is a volcano, right?
Mount Etna is a live volcano.
It's so cool. That's amazing.
Driving on the live volcano with my four-year-old, who is a little bit nervous about eruptions, they're called.
Eruptions. That's cute.
So,
I love children.
Anyway, let's go. We've got Clara on the line from Timonium. Clara, go ahead.
Hi, Clara.
This is a far more domestic question.
That's cool.
Actually, this year, in spite of the weather, my herb garden is doing reasonably well, which
good.
Is... created
that's awesome
aggravated a problem I've had for a long time. What do you do when the recipe calls for something like a teaspoon of fresh rosemary and you're confronting all of this rosemary and trying to figure out how to chop it to get it into something you can measure as opposed to a hopeless gloppy mess?
I think this is the time where you just don't worry about measuring. And you use your, I
you,
really, truly,
you
I would
use
just
your
use your judgment.
That's exactly where I
because
was
because your yeah. rosemary, and out of your, I mean, I just picked some of mine the other day, and it is so resiny, and it is so pungent, and it's, and I think it's because of all the rain we had. It's just astonishingly powerful. So I really think you just have to use your own judgment and just say, oh, well, I love this rosemary. It's super strong. I'm just going to put it like two leaves in it, you know, from one stem. Because with fresh herbs and you just picked it, it's going to be as intense and gorgeous as it could possibly be. So I would just use my own judgment and forget about what the recipe, you know, at least that gives you a guideline. The recipe gives you a guideline and then you decide, you're the cook.
The rosemary coming out of your garden is going to have all the flavor that it can possibly have. That which is coming out of a refrigerator somewhere that's been there for 2 weeks or 3 weeks drying out not going to be remotely the same.
Yeah.
So what else is going on in your garden and what is your, you know, traveling for food fantasy? So you had a domestic question. I'm looking for an international dream.
Well, first, since you prompted this, the dill kind of got out of control. Mm-hmm. I was sort of busy at work and turned away and turned back, and now I have 4-foot-high dill everywhere. Mm. Is there a good way to preserve either the leaves or the seeds? To be able to use them later? Because I would imagine even if they're not as flavorful as right from the garden, it's still better than taking out of a bottle.
Sure.
I mean, seeds can be dried for sure. You can fall in love with tzatziki for sure. Or there are a million different sauces
and another
that
way
you can make with
and
them.
And another way to just use a whole lot of dill is to cure a salmon. And that is the traditional herb used to cure salmon. I use basil, but I mean, if you've got a ton of dill, I mean, you could buy one side, and I don't know if you have a lot of people you feed, but you could buy one small side of salmon, cure it with salt, sugar, pepper, and then pack on the dill, and it will be gorgeous. And then you could even serve it with some, you know, a salad with dill and potatoes, and you know, just kind of maximizing the use of your dill. That's a good way to use a lot of it.
Ah, that sounds good. As it is, as I walk out the kitchen door, it sort of smells like a pickle factory.
I tell you what, I saw some excellent pickling cucumbers at market this morning.
You could go get some of those and pickle.
Yeah.
Ooh, that would be fun.
And even just quick pickles, you know, just slices of pickles and onions and doing a quick pickle. Salt, sugar.
All the best.
Sounds good.
Enjoy your summer.
The cucumbers are doing reasonably well this year, too.
Thank you.
I think it was all that rain.
Here it comes again. Thanks, Clara.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. So on your trip, Tony, what else did you do? You went to Sicily, then what?
Well, the most remarkable food thing, I'll tell you each
one.
So in Umbria, we stayed in a place up in the hills north of Perugia, near Gubbio, and a place that did not have remarkable food once upon a time that now does. Very talented chef who's there now, also using beautiful product, which is frankly I think hard to do in Umbria. Mm-hmm. That's not where everyone thinks of going on travel vacations, but since my stomach is so important to me, that's high on my list. That's definitely some of the best cooking in Italy, and it's also the best summer truffles I've ever had in my life.
That's so exciting.
And
summer truffles have a different flavor profile from winter black truffles. So
yeah, they don't have the same texture.
They tend to be mild. They have they're harder, firmer.
But
right.
I mean, winter black truffles in Umbria are very, very good typically.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
And these summer truffles are spectacular right now.
That's great that they're so good.
That was great fortune to run into those.
So your dish with that?
I a couple of dishes. I think the one that I would probably eat every single day if I possibly could. the breed of beef that you see in Tuscany and also in parts of Umbria is called quinina. It's they're white cattle that are U.S. cattle, usually 1,500 pounds. These are cattle that instead of being 18 month, they're more 20, 22 month, and they're about 1,100 pounds. And very muscled, very lean. Carpaccio cut from some of that beef, from the loin.
Yum.
And laid out just Parmigiano, salt, excellent olive oil from the region, and truffles. What else do you want?
And just a cascade. And just a cascade of truffles on there. Absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, I can just imagine, you know, they're not as expensive there, so they can make such better use of the truffles. And, you know, I can just imagine how pungent that was when it came to the table for you.
Well, that's the thing, is summer truffles usually don't have a lot of aroma.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, they were spectacular.
Yeah, and we were talking about it earlier, and you said they're almost a caramel color. And that's, I think, the difference with those truffles is I've seen some that they're more white on the inside. And I imagine that has something to do with ripeness, but I'm not positive about it. But I'd be curious to know, or if it's a slightly different, you know, type of summer truffle.
If there are any mushroom experts that want to call, it's 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. We'd love to hear your vacation desires if you're traveling to eat something interesting, eat something good.
Yeah, we'd love to hear about it.
A couple of interesting emails already.
So with your trip, did you have much pastry or was the concentration more on the other parts?
I'm sorry,
of the
did you ask me how many gelato I had every day?
I was going to say, I have a feeling there was some gelato in your, especially with two young children. I bet there was
There's some gelato on everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah, the laundry lady known as Tony at my house spent a lot of time with the gelato.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
all right.
But yeah, we
any particular flavors that you had that you were just like, oh my gosh.
I tell you what, spectacular cannoli in Sicily.
Oh, yeah.
Spectacular cannoli.
Yum.
I mean, made with
fresh
cheese milk ricotta.
Where it starts, right?
Yeah.
I watched
super flavorful shells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of Chef's Table, they have the guy that's famous, unfortunately, I can't think of his name right now, but anyway, you can look it up on Chef's Table. He's one of the pastry chefs that they feature in this last season. His story is so fascinating.
It's still his family pasticceria.
You didn't go there, did you?
Noto. No, because it would have been a little bit too much
too
of
far.
A... That's way down south on the island, on the east side.
Yeah, I would like to go visit him. That's an incredible story he has.
We have a couple of emails here to get to. So let's see. I'm starting to plan a trip for me. This is apropos. For me and my adult son, who's 25, for our last hurrah. We both agree that Italy is where we want to go. We will have about 8 days total, which needs to include travel time. What would be your recommendation for the first place to see and stay in Italy? And what time of year would you suggest? We're thinking mid to late March.
So what do you think, Tony? You know better than I do.
I will admit I'm thinking pick a different time of the year, because that's not necessarily the nicest time of the year to travel if you want to be outside at all. And it's a shame to not be outside. That's one of the pleasures of being there is, I mean, we dined al fresco probably 80% of the meals that we had. Going in July or August, you're at peak travel time. That can be hectic and a lot. A lot of times the shoulders of that time, I think, are pretty great. Going in May, going in September.
Yeah.
That's one. People always want to get to the cities, the famous cities, and see the remarkable architecture and the historic places, whether it's Rome or Venice or Florence. And there are lots and lots of others, but those are the three that you hear the most often. I would say you should get to one of those that's on your list at least. But you want to look at what is a reasonable, you know, say 2 to 3 hour drive or train ride to get you to somewhere that's very different, because Italy is 20 regions and the food differs enormously from region to region. The Tuscan food is not Umbrian food. It's not the food from the Marche, and they're all boom, boom, boom together. I mean, that's, you know, 2 hours, 2 hours, 2 hours apart from center to center. So the geography dictates so much. Getting a feeling for that, getting a feeling for the countryside and how things are actually done in the countryside. You know, New York City is not the United States.
Right.
And while it's remarkable, I would encourage anyone that comes to the U.S. to see more than just that.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. You have to decide what your priorities are. And I like what you've said, because you've made it so, okay, you go to a city and you see the things that you...
I would
be heartbroken if I didn't get to go into the countryside and really feel that and see that. That's my favorite place to be when I travel.
I mean, there are traditional places, like in Rome, which was the last place I ever went, there are traditional places to eat. I mean, one restaurant is a family restaurant that has been there since, unsurprisingly, 1946. Was a place called Osteria Costanza, and this is right down in the most historic area, and very straightforward restaurant and menu, and beautiful product, beautifully prepared, not expensive. You know, the dish that I had there, maybe my favorite pasta that I had the entire time, were tagliarini. So maybe half the size of linguine, but flat like that. And it was a very simple saute of little tiny baby calamari that you just do not find in the U.S.
So how big were they?
The exterior, like thumbnail.
So, I want some of those right now. Okay. Oh, they're so good. So those little tiny ones.
Yeah, I mean, the tentacles are the size of like big pencil erasers. So a saute of those and a tiny bit of garlic and little tiny fresh clams in a pan. Pasta goes in on top. Obviously handmade, hand cut, beautiful fresh stuff. Flavored with all the juice from the seafood the clams are just opened up in that.
So perfect.
You know, little bit of wine, little bit of oil, and some fresh parsley, and that's it.
Gorgeous.
So let's go ahead and take a call from Geraldine in Elkton. Geraldine?
Hi there, you're
Geraldine,
on the air.
Geraldine, I should say. You're on the air.
Oh, this is a memorable foreign meal that I had. I was 24 years old, traveling out of the country for the first time with my boyfriend for 2 weeks in Spain. And we landed in Barcelona, and the next morning we ordered a restaurant meal that really enlarged my idea of food. 'Cause I really wasn't a fan of rice, but we ordered the national dish of Spain, which is paella. Mm-hmm. And what was set on our table was a huge, like, 18-inch pan with saffron rice, chicken, Spanish sausage chopped up. Mussels, and giant prawns that looked like baby lobsters.
Mm-hmm.
And I was flabbergasted by this visual
beautiful thing, right?
This beautiful meal. I just thought, wow, this is amazing. And before this meal, the waiter asked me to take a look, and there were these fishing boats that had come up with crates. And he brought one crate over and pointed to the inside of it, and I just looked, and here were these squirming prawns. Well, they were going to go into my meal. Hmm. And that was part of this wonderful experience. We had wine, we had bread, fresh baked bread, and we ate paella every day that we were in eastern Spain, going up and down the coast. We ordered it every time and enjoyed every restaurant's little slant on the way they baked it or cooked it. And I tried to duplicate this, of course. As soon as I got home, I went, bought a paella pan, and tried to buy the ingredients, and was just changed. My gourmet meal changed me.
Now, that's an awesome story, Geraldine. That it's you can learn the technique. It is the hardest thing is coming up with the primary ingredients.
Well, that, I lived across the street from Larimer's. That was one of the premier grocery stores and butchers in the city of Washington. And I'd go in and very, authoritatively say, when are your prawns coming in? Hmm. And they would say, oh, well, we're going to have a shipment of those next Friday.
That's great.
And I'd go, great. And I'd feel very, very authoritative and very adult.
That's awesome.
That's a great story.
That's awesome. Thanks, Geraldine.
Yeah, what a shaping meal that was for you.
Well, when we come back on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine, we're live. We're taking your calls, 410-662-8780, or email us, formidablewolf@wypr.org. We have some more emails to get to. We're happy to take your calls. And then it's the most horrible chef's challenge ever. All of that and more on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we've gotten a lot of cool emails and calls about
it's been great. Fun.
Reasons to travel, but not... And a few dreams here at the end, which is kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got another one for us. I've got an email from Ellie. Hi, love your show. Please help. My family and I are going to Montreal in early August. The only thing I know about Canadian food is poutine. There must be more. My kids are teens, so we can eat anywhere. What's authentic Canadian food? What's food and restaurants in Montreal can you suggest we try?
I can't help with that one at all.
Yeah, I was last in Montreal in 1982, so
yeah.
I can't tell you authoritatively
about... I think I was there in 1980 with my mom and dad.
About any particular restaurants, although...
Unfortunately.
As much as I like French cooking... You would think that I would get there because, that is this French-speaking part of Canada, and mm-hmm. there's an awful lot of, dishes that you would say are from French extraction and or just literally straight on French dishes. I mean, that's you're going to find an awful lot of what you would find anywhere French-speaking, depending upon the product that's there. I do recall that there was excellent cheese, excellent lamb. Those are just the first two things that come to mind. First place I ever had lamb tenderloin. I thought it was remarkable.
Very good.
So, anyway, but that's that. I wish we could help you more than that. Gonna have
to
go
too,
do some research.
Yeah, we have to. I'll have to go there. I'd like to go to Montreal.
So you like snow? It'll be fine.
I do. I love it.
And then we have an email here, Aaron in Annapolis. I often hear you talk about going to an amazing place and eating what seems like the perfect. Quote, right out of the ground, or quote, right out of the sea, specialty of the place. When traveling, how does one go about finding that one thing that place does like no place else? and that one person who prepares it like no one else.
That takes research.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
It takes a lot of research. That's the... Yeah. I mean, and Michelin Guide is... If you're in Europe, Michelin Guide, particularly France, I would say Spain and probably Italy, right? Michelin Guide is... Especially France is very, very helpful.
Yeah, I think the Slow Food Editore in Italy is maybe the best.
Okay.
I think the other thing... I've got more advice over the years from winemakers. They care about what's on the table so much. And when you visit them, you're on the countryside, they're gonna let you know, you know what, this is where you go, this is what you eat there. That, I mean...
Yeah, that's the... Well, they live there.
And they're invested yeah. And they're invested in that table.
Right, exactly.
You know, so they want you to walk away with the best impression of that, so...
When they're also thinking about the regional food when they're making their wines, quite frankly.
Yeah.
So it's a super important marriage, and there's great understanding. And yeah, and some of the best meals we've also ever had were in their homes. I mean,
yeah.
On those trips, it's often, and you know, obviously that's not as easily available to other people. But, you know, for goodness sake, if you are visiting with a winemaker, ask them where they would eat. That's a good, or you can ask them ahead of time.
By the way, we're probably 2-3 minutes away from the worst
challenge you've ever had in your life.
Yeah.
Okay,
most horrible.
Right. Yeah, horrible.
Here is
an
excellent email from Dave
task.
In Hyattsville. One of my favorite vacation meals, albeit very pedestrian, is Frito Pie in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I got it right off the plaza in the old town, served right in the bag. Fritos crushed up and covered in chili and cheese.
Okay.
Have you had that?
No.
Have you been to Santa Fe?
I've never been to Santa Fe, so I'm going to have to go
you
now.
You can recreate
Actually,
that.
I have a friend in Santa Fe, so a very good friend. I used to work for her at the beginning of my career, so maybe I should go to Santa Fe and get a
Cindy will come back and report on Frito Pie.
I will.
Thanks,
I'm
Dave.
Going to right away. All right.
Last email.
Mm-hmm.
I am a bachelor who cannot cook. I went to farmer's market with my new girlfriend, and she made me buy tomatoes. I want to show off my innate ability by making tomato sauce. How do I do it?
That's awesome.
Make it easy. Also, she's probably listening. Theo on Federal Hill.
Uh-oh, Theo. So, garlic, shallot, onion. This is my French version of Italian sauce.
Oh, my God, yeah.
He's going to freak out. So, I'll tell you my version of tomato sauce because mine has a lot of butter in it.
Oh, I'll be the one weeping in the corner. Go ahead. You do it.
So, garlic, shallot, butter, gently cooked in butter. Just don't let the garlic brown ever. I don't care if you're making Tony's version, a version from a cookbook, or mine. Never allow garlic to brown. It becomes bitter
and nasty.
My
version is the correct version.
And then you add the tomatoes, a little bit of red wine, and some basil. And that's mine. And I would probably finish it with butter and a little bit of olive oil. But that is not a traditional Italian. That's just the way I make it. And I promise you, it's good. Salt and pepper. Maybe a little cayenne. Now here comes Mr. Italy. Go ahead, Tony.
No.
You're
but
on, Tony. You're on.
But Theo, you have to treat the tomatoes well, okay? You have to make sure that you pick the ones that are ripe, but not too ripe, and so that they're still texturally firm, but that the color is strong.
In my sauce, they need to be that way too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The easiest way to get the flesh that you want without the skins is to just split those tomatoes. And if you have a big box grater or some kind of a big grater, you literally can just take that half tomato and just like you're grating cheese, use that grater and you can just hang on to the skin and all of the flesh and all of the juice will go right into the bowl that you're over.
I've never heard of that in my life. I like that
idea,
Tony.
That's pretty darn easy.
Mm-hmm.
Into that bowl of tomatoes, I add nothing. In the pan... In the pan, you want like a ceramic, like a creuset or something like that, heavy bottomed, but it's lined with the ceramic. In that pan, a little bit of canola oil, get it hot, get it just a little bit hot, chopped garlic and onion, not shallot. And you probably, for six tomatoes, you probably need probably 2 cloves or 3 cloves of garlic, depending upon the size. Look for the most purple garlic that you can get from the store, from the market, that'll have the most pungency. You want to capture the juice when you crush it from the cutting board with your knife to put it in with the into the pan. Same thing with the onion that you have. You don't want a red onion; it's too spicy. You don't want a white onion; it's too mellow. And
so, what onion do you want?
And you just
A Spanish onion?
A Spanish onion.
Okay.
Typically.
Yellow onion? Okay.
Or some kind of yellow onion.
Mm-hmm.
And not a giant one either. And you want to sweat that long enough to flavor the pan.
Mm-hmm.
And then add your tomato. Reduce that by about half. Once you reduce it by about half, you add a little bit of red wine. And you add a lot of fresh basil, season it, salt, pepper. If you want it to be a little bit spicy, just slip a Calabrian chili in there and a tiny little bit of that oil. And
Calabrian chili.
Your sauce is going to work out.
Okay. Very good. You answered the question. Here's your chef's challenge.
Okay.
I'm going to make it very easy. See that one word? I want you to make ceviche from it. There's your chef challenge.
Oh, scallop ceviche.
Okay, you can use whatever you want. It's an unusual chef challenge. Hardly a horrible one.
No, that's because I have prepared a horrible one for you.
Oh, well, good.
So.
I can't wait.
Scallop ceviche. Scallop always has a little bit of a sweet flavor to it, almost like corn or something like that. So I think what I want is red onion because it's a little bit spicy. A red jalapeno because it's very spicy. Fine dice of both of those guys. A little sugar, a little salt, fresh lime juice, a tiny bit of fresh orange juice as well. And I want to put corn in there, and I want to put a little bit of yucca in there as well.
That's fun.
And and do a relatively quick one.
Did you really mean to say sugar? I've never heard of that.
I did, just a tiny bit of sugar.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
Just a tiny bit of sugar.
I like it.
I did mean to say that.
All right. Very cool. Let's go, kid.
So, all right.
We don't have much time left.
All right. So,
here's my horrible chef challenge.
Have fun with this one.
The most horrible chef challenge. Where is it? Oh.
It's on the reverse.
Jeez. Eggs, eggplant, garlic, cornmeal, pickled peppers, tripe. Oh. Duck fat, rosemary, sweet potatoes. Good Lord. Peaches. What's that word? Calamari, canola oil, a lemon, zucchini, Robiolo cheese and Oreo cookies. Ah, oh, Tony. Come on. Eggplants, garlic, cornmeal, pickled peppers, tripe. You know? Okay.
You don't have to use everything.
And you haven't given me...
You have to use all but one thing.
Okay. Calamari. That.
Did you see the conditions?
No. You have a table to... You have a tabletop, fryer, and a grill, and one sauté pan. Oven and range do not work. Okay, that's no problem. A tabletop fryer, so that will be, I'm going to lightly dust the, I'm going to use the canola oil to fry in then, if that's the oil I have. The calamari, a little bit of cornmeal dusting. I'll do a traditional wash because you've given me eggs. Little cornmeal, salt and pepper, deep fry that and serve it with a mixture. I'll gently sweat the eggplant with garlic, very sort of delicately, and olive oil. I'll add the lemon. I'm going to add a little bit of the brunoise of zucchini, which is the smallest of dice, to it at the end. So it'll be zucchini, the eggplant, the garlic. I'll add some of the pickled peppers, really finely chopped at the end. And that will be served with the fried calamari. And you've given me Robiolo cheese, which I'm absolutely just having afterwards just to eat because I love Robiolo. You give me sweet potatoes, so I think it would be really fun to boil the sweet potatoes, and then once they're cooked and tender, drain them, put them in the oven for a few moments just to dry them out a little bit, and mash those with fresh peaches and form them into cakes and fry them in the duck fat. I can't believe I just said that. I think I have everything. Yeah, I did it. That's it.
I was going to put bananas on there. Oh. I'm going to give you a golf clap.
Uh-oh. All right. Well, I didn't use the Oreo cookies or the tripe, so that's two things.
I can't believe you didn't use Oreo cookies and the tripe in the same dish.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
All right. We do have another email here. This is from Dave in Ellicott City. There were two favorites on our trip to Italy. First was grilled calamari overlooking the lagoon in Venice.
Hmm.
Sounds brutal, Dave. The second was a gelato. Had it 14 days straight.
Wow. Yum. What was it?
That's awesome.
What was it?
I didn't say what flavor. Didn't say what flavor.
Oh, I want to know what flavor it was. He has to tell us.
There are probably 14 different flavors.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought it was so good. Or maybe 28 if he had two flavors in one cup.
If you had the same one 14 days in a row, you need to call us.
Mm.
410-662-8780. The second was a gelato, and the trip I would want to do would be to Piemonte and finish in Priano and Ravello on the Amalfi Coast.
Nice.
That, to me, I mean, my advice would be those are two different trips.
Okay.
Going down south is definitely its own thing. And frankly, if you can, you want to go when there's beach time, and that's awfully nice. And they're just, honestly, there are an awful lot of places that are not even open other times of the year along the coastline there. If the coastline is your big attraction, there are a bunch of interesting wines and wineries to visit down there as well. Piemonte, the whole world tries to go during the truffle season, the White Truffle Festival, which is great, but the whole world wants to go to it. The truffles are in season for the next couple of months. There's no reason not to go in, say, November. I mean, if you're after,
which would be great,
tasting wine and eating great dishes with truffles, and you know, going to, I mean, they're fabulous restaurants, Bovio in
the
Barolo zone, or Trattoria della Posta. I mean, there are any number of excellent places to get to.
Yeah, but just would love.
Those are two different trips. An easy side trip from Piemonte is up into the Valle d'Aosta.
Yes.
To see Mont Blanc and Gran Paradiso and the mountains there. So anyway, so one last question for you.
Okay.
What is the wackiest place on your list of the food destinations you want to get to? The one I would be most surprised by.
Well, I'd like to go to Australia. And
really?
Yes, I really would. My father traveled there a great deal during his lifetime doing business. And just, you know, hearing him talk about it and have his story, listen to his stories when he would come back from, he would often be gone for almost 4 weeks at a time when he traveled. And I've always wanted to go there because of him. So, and I know that their food scene is incredible. So I would really like to. And I'd also like to see the Opera House in Sydney. When I was a kid, I was sort of fascinated with it and used to draw it. And so I would just really love to go there. And I have a little bit of a fear of going there because of the amount of time it takes to fly there. So it's really been an obstacle.
They have medicine for that.
Yeah, well, but that's always been my obstacle to going there, is I just don't want to get on an airplane for that period of time. So anyway.
Well, speaking of time, I think we're out of time. I want to thank Luke Spignall, as always, for being our producer and engineer.
You're the best, Luke. We love you. And we had Will with us today.
Big Will with us today.
Thanks, Will. You're awesome.
And manning the phones. And if you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Instagram as Chef Wolf and on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf.
My Instagram is TheRealTonyForeman. If you want to contact us, it's formanwolf@wypr.org. Thanks for the calls and the emails today.
Yes.
If you want to download this or any other one of the programs, go and find the podcast on the WYPR website, wypr.org, and look for the Formal Wolf page. Thanks so much for listening.
And happy Sunday. Thank you.